Special relationships and transatlantic correspondence galore. It's time for another installment of New York Real Talk on Siren Radio and Southside Broadcasting.
Well, they said it couldn't be done, but we're going to prove that it can be done over the next 35 to 40 minutes because we have got an artist, a genuine quality artist, an artist who specializes in so many magical, wondrous things in terms of his work that, frankly, I suspect that just one 35 to 40 minute New York Real Talk will not be sufficient. But enough of such stuff, because it's time for me to actually press the magic button. And without further ado, actually change the background. So we actually move straight into Pembrokeshire's finest, and at least one version of Pembrokeshire's finest, of course, Graham Herdwood. Welcome to the programme, Graham. How are you?
I'm very well. Very kind words. Thank you very much indeed.
True, because let's face it, if either Pamela or myself say something untoward, you've got your brother on the other side to actually do things as well. Your brother.
And I know where you live.
Yeah, I know where you live. I mean, you wouldn't be a bro if I wasn't your brother. You know,
I am a bro.
Welcome to New York Real Talk, Graham.
Hello, Pamela. How are you?
I'm good. It's like summer here. I mean, which is dubious, I mean, sometimes actually that happens in the Northeast. We get a few crazy days of warmth in the summer. I mean, in the winter.
New York's had a pretty rough time with cold weather, though, hasn't it?
It's been really like a very high on the seismic graph of weather.
I went to New York a few times, and it was just before Christmas, and I was wearing a pair of winkle pickers, and I couldn't feel the end of my...
Wait. I'm sorry, back up. What were you wearing?
Winkle pickers.
Yes, winkle pickers, Pamela. Are you not familiar with that form of tight, pointed shoe routines? Much beloved of teddy boys, I believe, Graham.
Anyway, the end of my shoes were frozen, and my toes didn't quite reach the end. But I did go walking a lot when I was over there, and I really enjoyed it. So,
well, there we go. You know, and I actually saved somebody's life with a pair of winkle picker shoes. This is true. This is absolutely true. I'll briefly tell you the story, because I had a very dear old friend in Northern Ireland, a fellow called Tony Brown, who was a playwright and poet and general all-round lunatic. And he'd got a terribly bad dose of food poisoning. And he wasn't actually that well. And his doctor said, it's touch and go. And he really looked like he was about to pop his clogs to hand in his lunch pail. Anyway, so I went round, and I had this pair of shoes at the time. And they were long pointed. They were tan coloured shoes with very high Cuban heels. Can you imagine? Very high Cuban heels. And they were really pointed, really pointed. They were so sharp, you could have kicked the eye out of a turkey with them. I never tried, but you could have done if you wanted to. There were these shoes. And I was sitting on this friend of mine, at the edge of this friend of mine's bed. And we were chatting away, and I was swinging the foot as we were chatting away to him. And his eye was caught with this absurd piece of footwear. And he looked, and he went, and he started laughing. And he went purple in the face with laughter. And then he calmed down a bit, and he called for his wife and brought him some tea and a sandwich. And she said that, and afterwards she said, that's the first time he's eaten anything in 4 days. And we thought he was going to die. And then a few days later, I went round again to see how he was. And he said, you know what? He said, those shoes saved my life. Because he said it was so funny and so ludicrous. I had to laugh. And it brought me out of myself. So I saved a man's life.
There we are. Philip's obviously raised the bar here. But what you may have been wondering why we're talking about weather. Well, actually, Graham, you actually were commissioned by the National Trust to paint the aftermath of the great storm of 1987. So it's not as bizarre as we might have actually said to actually start Pamela's interview by actually talking a little bit about your backdrop. Of course, you got an MA at the Royal Academy. You moved to Pembrokeshire in the 1980s. But that great storm of 1987, of course, preceded, many people would say, by Michael Fish, who said, I've heard somebody who actually said there's a bit of a storm on the way. You don't have to worry. There are those of us on this side of the Atlantic that remember those historic times. Pamela, perhaps you'd like to ask Graham about the great storm and the aftermath.
Well, do you want me to ask him about that?
That was the reason I fed you that line.
Pamela, I was having an exhibition in West London, and it was a really cold night, and we all came outside. This is when I smoked, actually. We all went outside the gallery, and suddenly there was this really balmy wind. It felt like going into an oven. And nobody had realized that that was just the preamble to the storm. And we all sort of did the show and everything, went and had a meal afterwards. And the next morning I woke up in Clapham and it was devastation. And ironically, the night the storm was about to happen, the head of the National Trust, or one of the directors, said, one day I'll ask you to do a commission. And he phoned me up the next night, or maybe 2 days after the storm. He said, I've got the commission for you. And he asked me to go down and paint one of the big National Trust buildings, which was in Petworth. And that was the commission. So I did about 20 paintings, little watercolours, depicting the aftermath. So that was it.
Hundreds of thousands of trees were felled, were blown up, blown out of their roots, you know.
Petworth. Now, can this be found online? Can you search it and find the paintings that you've done?
I think you might be able to find them. If you look up Petworth House, which is in... it's in Sussexville, isn't it? Or is it?
I think it's Hampshire, Petworth, Hampshire, or is it still Surrey? I'm not sure. It's only about 15, 20 minutes down the road from here, where I live.
But if you look up Petworth House, Pamela, you might be able to find something. Anyway, one of them was presented to His Royal Highness now, actually, Prince Philip. So I was quite pleased about the whole thing.
Well, it was Charles, wasn't it? Wasn't it Charles?
It would indeed have been actually currently His Royal Highness the King, is King Charles III. Then, of course, Prince of Wales, Prince Charles, just to qualify the situation. Graham, the reason I wanted to mention that stuff initially, before we go on to your current project, which is fascinating and amazing and terrific, is you prefer to paint, I believe, actually in situ, battling the elements and so on, as it's sort of noted here. Now, from that point of view, and obviously being based in Pembrokeshire, was the Great Storm something which you thought, fantastic, I should really be out there doing this? Was that part of the inspiration? Or is this something that you like to get the old cagoules out, the Wellington boots and all of those protective devices and say, look, this is what Turner did, this is what I'm going to jolly well do?
Well, when I left the Royal Academy, I did a lot of studio paintings, which were depicting, you know, the old wharf buildings around the river. And when I first arrived in Pembrokeshire, I actually took the easel out and painted on location. And it was, you're facing the elements, you're facing movement, you're facing the altering light, and it gets you going. It's sort of the energy involved with it is quite fantastic. And painting on a clifftop, it was quite energetic. It was but very powerful, and I really enjoyed doing this, and I still do. I still paint on location.
You know what, Graham? There's a bend in a road which is right near our house upstate, and I don't see it as much anymore when I'm up there, but I used to see, like, you'd go out on a Saturday and you'd see someone setting up an easel, which is not something you see every day. I mean, a lot of fine artists did move to the Woodstock area and the upstate area because of the vistas, you know, it's very beautiful. But I think you should come and you should park yourself in that. I'll take a picture and I'll send it to you. And it's where you find, like I said, it's been quite a few years since I've actually seen anyone do that. But I think it would be a stunning vista for you to paint, and I think that you should come and do it.
Well, if that's an invitation, I definitely will take you up on that. That's very kind of you. And so somewhere to stay and...
Absolutely. And the thing is, I'd love to see that through your eyes. Like, I know what it looks like. I know it so well. And it is such a beautiful, because if you're right between, you know, as you're going up a mountain, and it's the Mohonk Mountain Range, Mohonk Mountain House, which is a, you know, it's kind of a little treasure, a historic treasure that we love. And owned by the Smiley family, who own hundreds of thousands of acres. And they were, I believe, a Quaker family. But it's a lot of unspoiled area. And as you're there, it's sort of strange because up there you have all these different angles. And then down there you have, you know, a really broad view of the valley, which is where we live. So I would love to see that painted through your vision and your sense of color and wonder.
I'd love to do it.
Oh, goodness.
Well, there we are. The contracts will doubtless be in the post. But as many people actually say, the concept of actually appreciating art and working through art, really, Pamela sent me an email. I'll reveal this to the listener. It might be a bit embarrassing for Pamela, but they sent me an email about 5 minutes before the show is due to start with 35 portraits. Now, actually, if you're going to do art properly, you need to basically spend about 35 minutes on each one of those. So having said that, I will actually put up on screen, certainly for the benefit of our Facebook people, there we are, some of the faces that are actually involved in your current project, where you've moved from the outside, the external landscape, through to perhaps the internal landscape, possibly, and the connection with respect to Pembrokeshire. So perhaps, Graham, you'd like to just share with us why that shift from the outside to, again, portraiture, because fundamentally these are kind of different things, different areas, almost different genres when you're dealing with the still image.
Well, I mean, you're basically trained, as most people train. I train to draw and paint from life. And so I think I'm able to put my, you know, I'm quite versatile in what I do in my projects and things. And this particular project is called The City of Portraits, and it's about people who are, it's about a community spirited, you know, people who are very involved with where I, the place where I love to live. And it started off by just doing a few small portraits. And my fiance, may I say this, who unfortunately passed away, one of her legacies was to make sure I carried on doing it. And she said, why not just paint the community? And you'll be involved with people. So each and every one of the portraits is a very ephemeral contact with somebody else's character, personality. And so I've been involved doing this for the last 9 years. And it's been, for me, very sort of personally inspirational. It's been having that human contact, but also, you know, having a dialogue with somebody, whether it be for 10 minutes, whether it be for sort of half an hour, whether it be for 3 hours, and each and every one have been a sort of absolute godsend to do, because it is actually meeting people and it's having that sort of, as I said, ephemeral rapport with somebody. And I think I've achieved about 850 now the project.
I'm sure Pamela will send all 800 over to me in the fullness of time, but and sort of try to fit them into a micro dot, really. But that's okay. She's American. We can appreciate that. It is New York real talk. I know where she's coming from. Just one question from me before I hand over the interview rooms to Pamela, I think. Graham, the image-laden society in which we live, the last 150 years, there's been image after image. You know, the technology that has basically provided for the likes of how we're communicating now, but the snapshots, all of those sort of things, billions of images. Is that good or questionable when it comes to the human spirit?
Well, the human spirit will always prevail. And that's what the project, I think, is also about. It's about how many good people there are. And there's a vast amount. And, you know, and getting to know the community, which is the core of where I live, I think it's not repeating like hundreds of images in the same way. Every single one is done with a very personal sort of reference. And so the idea was to have it as a, you know, as St. David's, the saint, said, start off with the smaller things and you end up with a bigger picture. This is actually happening in that respect. It's each portrait's, you know, 7 by 5 inches, and the bigger picture is having them as a collective. So I'm very happy doing that.
And also historically, of course, it was very much a way of capturing portraits of people who were deemed to be the main leaders in society. That's why obviously so many painters had to effectively deal with sponsors, or they had, you know, the Medici family or various other folk within that. So in many ways, would you argue that it's become more democratized in terms of the fact that ordinary people, whatever that phrase might mean, can actually have their particular images captured forever on canvas by yourself?
Yeah, you've hit it concisely, what I feel about it. I mean, how many people have their portraits done? I think it works both ways. Each sitter, you know, they're invariably people I know. They feel sort of quite proud to have them done, have the portrait done of them. But also I feel really proud as well, because I'm benefiting from it. So it's, yeah, it's basically, it makes it not as sort of esoteric, the fact you're sort of, you know, to get my portrait done, I have to be somebody who's known, or somebody who's...
like Pamela Suman or Philip Hurdwood, for instance, you know.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, those are the two very people I'm talking about, you know. No, it's bringing sort of art to people who, as we all can sort of appreciate, it's becoming a bit, I don't know, what's the word for it, Phil? How would you say? Well, it's people are not having much contact with the art world. And I think it gives people that sort of understanding that it's, you know, I'd never put yourself on a pedestal.
And it sort of demystifies the whole kind of art world itself, doesn't it? And what was a lovely thing, one exhibition you had once some years ago now, it was really interesting to see some of the, I knew a lot of the portraits that were there, and there were so many of the folks that came along, ordinary folks from the town, or from the village, really, it's a city, but it's no more than a village in size. But so many of the folks that were there was, oh, look, there's me, there's my one, and they were just ordinary folks, and it was just a delight to see the pride and the happiness on their faces when they said that's my one, look, you know, oh my, that's you, you know. And it was just a joy, it really was, you know.
Me.
And to have them all have all the pictures, all the portraits put onto one big installation, that is the community, that you have represented, you know.
Yeah, you've hit it there, Phil. And you know, you get responses like you know, this elderly lady who I didn't know very well, and you know the term Bach, which means dear. She said, "We're really proud of you, Bach."
Ah,
it hit my heart, you know, and that's what it's all about for me as well. You know, it's as simple as that. It's having that sort of beautiful communication with people, and it's very important to me, and I'm very proud of it. So, and it's a project which I'm not going to stop doing. Going to carry on doing it.
There's been an awful lot of media attention on the whole subject and on the project, hasn't there? You know.
Yeah.
Well, it certainly addresses the whole notion of impact studies, which those in higher education will be well aware. They're always asking, yes, it's all very well talking about these artists, but what impact are they having on society? I think you've just proven in the last few moments the huge impact you're having in Pembrokeshire, Graham, and indeed probably beyond as well, just through people actually listening to this discussion about the process as well. Anyway, it is Pamela Suman who co-hosts the show, and it's time she actually got the chance to actually not only have her phone play Mana Mana on a regular basis, but obviously, you know, introduce us to your own questions. Pamela, over to you.
Thank you. Well, you know, nothing like inserting a little bit of the Muppets into life, you know.
Hey, it's my life, Pamela.
A bit of Muppets. Well, this is a case where I'm having such a good time that I've sort of forgotten that I'm even supposed to be, you know, asking questions. But I was thinking something that kept coming to me, because I love taking fastidious notes about everything and anything all the time. And when I was looking at the photographs, what came to me was just a silly little phrase, which is in thoughtful repose. But the interesting thing about that is I'm looking at all of these people and seeing, as you say, you know, everyday people with an expression. And I think, I believe that as a very untrained, I'm not an artist, I'm not a visual artist, but as a layman just looking on at these portraits, you really captured in that sort of Giacometti way. It's almost like you've sort of captured the soul within them. Somehow you are empathic in a way where you can find the spirit and the essence within each person, because you see it in every person there. I get a sense of who they are.
Yeah, you know, it's very true.
Yeah, you know, like sometimes you'll see people just painting, especially by lovely seaside places, you'll see portraits, you know, artists will set up their easels, and it's all lovely and it's wonderful. But there's almost like sometimes there's a veil, and you feel like it's almost a caricature. It's sweet. It's very sweet.
Yeah.
feel their soul. You don't feel an essence or spirit. And that's one thing that has taken my breath away with your work, because everything that I've seen of your work has so much spirit and soul and essence and emotion in it. I'm sure people have looked at your work and wept, you know.
Yeah. There have been portraits for me where I've left and I've become really emotional. And every single one has a different feeling. The quintessential sense of what I'm doing is still sort of, you know, consistent. But, you know, some portraits not shine out more than others, but I've left with a sort of deep feeling of very positive emotion, actually, and it sort of reiterates what the whole project's about. It's about the, you know, the special sides of every person you look at, and everybody is special. And it sounds very trite saying that, but
I understand what you're saying, and it's so true. I don't think it can be said enough.
No, it's very difficult to describe how I feel about it. You know, I get a sort of sense of you get involved with the concentration. You get involved with, somebody else you're sort of involved with. And you get a self of sort of purpose. And also, everything seems to make sense to me when I've been involved with doing these portraits. And it's sort of, and it's a reference to Debbie as well. She's very much in my soul still, who was my fiance. And it's all these different sort of feelings I have. And I find it totally empowering, the whole thing. And I think that's, and also because they're not totally finished, you know, each portrait can be quite quick. And I think the longest I've taken is about 7 hours. So they're quick portraits. It doesn't mean they're not finished. It's about an essence. You capture something which immediate. And maybe that's why it's having that connection which comes through, possibly. Yeah.
And it's funny, isn't it, with a portrait, and I can see that in some of them, where sometimes, you know, it does have a not an unfinished look, but you've got the moment, and that's the time to stop painting.
It's the directness of the moment, and it's the whole build-up as well. You know, it's not just the painting. Like, it can be a bit of comedy involved as well, people getting embarrassed or feel awkward. I feel awkward, and we sort of like, we have this sort of moment of sort of getting to know each other. And it's very important to do that. So the build up, and then people sit, and is my hair okay? How's the lippy looking? All this, I mean, whatever people want to talk, just to relax. And it's about, yeah, as you said, Pamela, it's about that moment. You know, it's very important. So thank you for asking me that, because it's each one is a privilege for me anyway.
Have you ever been tempted, in terms of relaxing your subject, to actually bring out the ukulele, Graham?
Well, I think they'd run a mile. No, they wouldn't. No, I think the ukulele would be okay. I think if I brought the violin out, that would be a different kind of fish. Or the drum kit, or the guitar, or the piano. I'm dabbling at all these silly things. But no, it's you placate people by saying, "Look, I feel just as nervous as you do," and not make it feel unusual. Just, yeah, it's a sort of normality. I do it every day. These people don't, so I can understand how they feel.
I have a question. Do you? I know it's, I'm sure it's different with everyone, but do you speak to them and sort of disarm them as you're painting, or is it all very quiet? Is everyone quiet?
Oh, no. The whole thing is about, it's conversation as well. So I'm quite happy people moving around, and I do say, maybe if you stop smiling or just for a moment. But it's a very convivial atmosphere. You know, I've had people come in with you know, a 4-pack of lager, and they said, "Do you mind if I drink?" I said, "No, you do what you want. I'm not going to drink, because that will be it for me." You know, but
yeah, drinking, no, and painting—it's illegal anyway. It's a dangerous thing at the best of times.
I get the drink painting police around, you know.
No, especially you're driving a car as well.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, one-handed. You know, but no, but it's all, the whole thing is, I don't try and make it too precious either. So Yeah, it's benefiting both sides.
Well, actually, I do have a question that just came to me. Aside from this mammoth and incredible and phenomenal project that you're doing, is there anything that you'd like to do, or a work, or a place you'd like to go to and paint, or something that's been in your mind, a project to do that you'd like to share, or some, or muse about that you'd be interested in doing as an artist, and seeing through your eyes, and having that conversation and sharing that with the world?
Sorry, in what respect? Would I like to go somewhere and
And paint. Like, is there something that you'd like to paint, or something, or someone, or
are you
some.
tempted to head off to the Seychelles, for instance, or indeed the Antarctic, or maybe even Mars these days?
Not going to do a go. No, I did paint in California a few years ago, and I had an ambition to try and look at the coastline around there, which is, actually is not dissimilar to the Pembrokeshire coastline. And I was staying with a friend just north of San Francisco, and I was going up the coast, and she lent me her flat back, her pickup, and I was painting every day, and I was very, very inspired by it, for the colors, the people, and yeah, I'm always very ambitious to go and find new places to paint, and it's like, you know, it's a new event for me. It's a fresh feeling, in that respect, Pamela. Yes.
I would love to see how you would see the moon. If you could go to the moon and paint, how would it look through your eyes?
Green
That's
cheese.
great. Which
Green
one?
cheese. Green cheese. The moon is made of green cheese. You know this.
They've not had a, well, I guess it would be kind of difficult. Never mind. I'm living in a
No,
monopsonal. But like
it's a
with
very.
paints, and would they float away? Just stupid. How could you go to the moon and paint? And just, I would just, in a world where anything's possible, I would love to see what you.
I always thought that if somebody offered me a mission, a trip to Mars, I'd take it for that reason, to see
Well,
what the.
Elon
I
Musk
don't
has been known to
know
listen to these podcasts, so I'm sure that could be
what
arranged. Who knows with his grand
he's
dream? I think he's a little
doing.
bit busy with Twitter at present, but other than that, once he gets that sorted out, the Mars trip for Graham Hurdwood might be on the cards. I must ask Graham, though, growing up with Philip Hurdwood, I've known Philip since the early 1980s, since his days in Bergerac and
Since I
so
was a
on.
small boy, since I was a small
Well,
boy, actually,
not
I lived
quite, but I'm fascinated, Graham. Was Philip a constant
irritation.
artistic soul as a child? Was he constantly channeling his inner voice abilities? I mean, it has been cited actually on other programs that he is the 21st century version of George Sanders, amongst other things. So I don't know, Graham, have there been any sort of areas with respect to that which you thought, yeah, my brother's going to go on stage and I'm just going to paint, basically?
Any story I can recount is
I know
I
what
went
it is.
to and you know I did I hated it with vengeance but Philip saved me because he sent me the most lyrically funny beautiful letters and I looked forward to getting them and he inspired me, he kept me going, and I always thought Philip's always been quite a vociferous character. Not too many expletives, well, one or two maybe, but he's always been very entertaining. He's always been thoughtful. He's very into music. Always showing me what he feels about creativity, and he's really inspired me. You know, our father died when I was very young. How much older are you? You're only a few years older than me, aren't
I'm much younger than you, actually, by
you?
about 20 years, I think.
Yeah, so those letters were very far advanced, actually.
They
So,
were, yeah, I was only two.
yeah, no. So you took me under your wing, didn't you?
I did, and clucked, and then I laid an egg, and everybody was very surprised.
Yeah, this is the kind of thing I had to sort of put up with.
I know exactly the feeling. I remember once I actually drove Philip and a mutual friend, David Treloar, all the way from Teesside to Hull, Kingston upon Hull. It was an experience I don't think they will ever
Oh
forget, but what the heck?
gosh, that's
Yeah,
right.
a
God.
pair of them, or David Treloar as well.
Yeah,
Well, you.
absolutely. A general combination fact. We must introduce David to the Pamela Sue Mann world. But anyway, wacky New York moment. Pamela, would you like to ask the usual wacky New York moment question, which is a staple, of course, of New York Real Talk? The telepathy of Pamela Suman, who will actually unmute, will actually sort of reveal the thing now. Go, Pamela.
I've got two teenagers in the other room, and there are eruptions of laughter at any moment.
Oh, really?
I mean, not at us, but at whatever's going on in there.
They're laughing with rather than laughing at Pamela. That's the message.
Of course.
Yeah, not laughing with.
You've been to New York City?
Yeah, I've been there about four times.
Oh, excellent. Okay, so this is good. I know you're going to have at least one, probably more. So
I won't tell you.
We say it's sort of a confluence. I don't even know if I'm speaking the right words. I'm just using words that are coming to mind.
Confluence is indeed a recognized word, Pamela. So
you've got this energetic field, and they all come together, and they're sitting just under New York. I'm convinced of this. So it's like the Twilight Zone in a way, except things aren't disappearing. Sometimes things just appear. People just appear. You know, someone that you know from Bratislava, you'll see them in the coffee shop.
Yeah.
So with the spirit of that, because it's true. And everyone I have ever met who's been to New York that I've ever asked has had a New York story. So something that comes to mind that's really wacky, like a happening or an experience or someone you saw or something you experienced while you were here that you thought this could only happen in New York City, and it's really strange and it's happening to me and I can't believe it. Do you have a story like that you'd like to share with us?
Well, the first thing is, I mean, when I've been to America, and especially New York or California, you always feel that you're slightly in a film set. It's something we've all been brought up with in Britain, in the UK, you know, American films, music. And Phil said I'm not allowed to tell one of the stories because it's the punchline is very funny, but it's I don't think I ought to tell it. But no, I stayed on the West Side in Madison. Is it Madison? Madison 9th Street, is that right?
Madison Avenue was sort of in the middle.
Yeah.
You were on the West Side?
I was on the way, and I went to meet a friend of mine who I'd met in Dublin about 10 years previously, Brendan Higgins, and he was a New York Irish. And I met him to meet him for a drink, and we had a few, and we had a good laugh. And he said, just make sure you get a taxi back to the West Side. So I went out, started walking home, and I saw Central Park, and I could see the bright lights of the West Side over the other side. And I thought, it's not that far. So this was about 1 o'clock in the morning, and so people said, do not enter Central Park at night. So
depends whether you want to be mugged or whether you don't want to be mugged. Let's face it, it's a choice.
If it was in the last few years, you'd be fine. But if you were if it was in the 80s or certain parts of the 90s, it might not really be a good idea.
I think post 90s, early 2000. Anyway, I decided to walk across because the lights looked very close. Anyway, as I got further and further into the depths of Central Park, the lights didn't get any closer. And I looked behind me and the lights were just as far away. And I was walking through, and then the paranoia set in. This is probably not the question you asked anyway, but it was just, you know, something you've seen in films. Do not do this. Do not, if it was me, I would not do that. It was me and I did it. And I was halfway across and I heard all this rustling. I thought, oh my God, what have I done? What have I done? And it was just a couple came out of the woodland. And
I wonder what they could have been doing, perhaps.
I wouldn't like to endeavor to think about it. Anyway, they just said to me, "Are you okay, honey?" And I said, "I shouldn't have been in the middle of Central Park." She said, "We'll walk you through to the other side." They took me to the other side. So,
Pamela did bring up the Twilight Zone, so inevitably, it was a wonderful Twilight Zone-esque episode. Really, you got through it.
This is one thing about New York City, which is remarkable, and people do comment on it. The people here are actually quite friendly.
Yeah.
If you have a dog with you or a baby with you, not that I'm suggesting that you should steal someone's dog or baby in order to have people be nice to you, but people are actually
No,
Do you know, Pamela, I've heard the same thing about people in Pembrokeshire as well. They're also quite friendly as well. It's amazing. Maybe in other parts of the country as well. Astounding.
Yeah,
Graham,
they
how can
are.
people actually follow you online? Do you have a website? Is there a way in which people can actually get a better insight into some of the things we've just had a chance to skim the surface of today?
I do. My name's online, Graham Herdwood, but my website is dysfunctional at the moment, so I'm looking for somebody to do my website.
That's not a good name for a website, Graham. Dysfunctional. You know, you need to have a bit
No.
more zip on the whole thing. It would work on that basis.
But if you look up my name online, it will come up with some of the projects I've done. And
It's been a genuine privilege and a delight just sharing some of those aspects. Pamela, last two questions. Time have arrived. Over to you.
no, please don't make me.
go on, Pamela. Did I answer your question? What you
Yes.
wanted? Yeah, I did.
And it was really fantastic. It was beautiful. But it's almost like you're giving me the hatchet, and then you're making me swing the hatchet,
Yes.
Alex.
No, swing it. Go on, swing it.
Go on. Swing the
So,
hatch, swing the hatch, swing the hatch.
oh no, don't get carried away, Alex.
You ought to be on the stage. Anyway,
Absolutely in earnest. And I've got my date book here somewhere. Oh, here we go. It happens to have flamingos on it. How about that? So I would like to know, we would like to know, number one, have you had a good time? And number two, will you come back? And number three, will you come back soon, please?
number one, I've had a really fantastic time. Thank you. Number two, absolutely. And number three, absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. No, I've really enjoyed it. I had to be honest, I was feeling quite, I had butterflies in my stomach. And,
Yeah, every time Philip Herdwood's on the line, I get the same effect, basically. It's all right,
yeah.
it's understandable. He
I
terrorizes us, but you know.
don't eat caterpillars.
Yeah.
And you won't get
Yeah,
butterflies in your
yeah,
stomach.
yeah. I'll be back to your lettuce impersonations as well soon, Philip. But meanwhile, Pamela, New York City is home to what?
The world's finest pickle.
Phenomena. Phenomena. Phenomena.
Supermarket with you. Wanna dance in the supermarket.
get something better. I wanna dance in the supermarket with you. Wanna dance in the supermarket with you. I wanna dance in the supermarket with you. Let's dance like pink flamingos. I'm the only me, you're the only you. You know me so well. I'm the only me, you're the only you. You know me so well. I wanna dance in the supermarket.
Let's dance like pink flamingos do. And I will dance like me. And you will dance like you.